Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namah Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 8 Chapter 20 Bali Maharaj surrenders the universe. Today we're reading text number 10.
Manasvina karunikasya shobhanam yarati kamopanayena durgati Kuta punar brahma vidam bhavadrasham Tato vato rasya dadami vanchitam
Word meanings Manasvina of persons who are greatly munificent
Karunikasya
of persons celebrated as very merciful.
Shobhanam,
very auspicious.
Yat,
that.
Arti,
of persons in need of money.
Kama upanayena,
by satisfying.
Durgati,
becoming. Excuse me, becoming poverty stricken.
Kutaha,
what?
Punaha,
again is to be said.
Brahmavidam,
of persons well versed in transcendental science, Brahmavidya.
Bhavadrisham,
like your good self.
Tata,
therefore,
Vato,
of the Brahmachari,
Asya,
of this Vamanadeva,
Tadami,
I shall give,
Vanchitam,
whatever he wants. Translation. By giving charity, a benevolent and merciful person undoubtedly becomes even more auspicious, especially when he gives charity to a person like your good self. Under the circumstances, I must give this little brahmachari whatever charity he wants from me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. If one accepts a poverty-stricken position because of losing money in business, gambling, prostitution, or intoxication, no one will praise him. But if one becomes poverty-stricken by giving all of his possessions in charity, he becomes adored all over the world. Aside from this, if a benevolent and merciful person exhibits his pride in becoming poverty-stricken by giving his possessions in charity for good causes, his poverty is a welcome and auspicious sign of a great personality. Bali Maharaj decided that even though he would become poverty-stricken by giving everything to Vamanadev, this is what he would prefer.
Manasvina karunikasya shobhanam tadarti kamo panayena durgatihi kuta punar brahmavidam bhavadrisham tato vato rasya dadami vanchitam.
By giving charity, a benevolent and merciful person undoubtedly becomes even more auspicious, especially when he gives charity to a person like your good self. Under the circumstances, I must give this little brahmachari whatever charity he wants from me. Bali Maharaj is explaining to Shukracharya why he's going to give everything to Vamanadev, giving his reasons, his arguments to his spiritual master. It's Shukracharya. He's a very elevated person, actually. Of course, he's from the beginning of the universe, one of the first personalities of this universe. Shukracharya is the son of Bhrigu, and Brihaspati is the son of Angira, and they were both students of Angira, and there was always some competition going on between them. And it was because of this competition, disagreement. Actually, Shukracharya thought that Angira was favoring his son, Brihaspati. So at some point he left him and he became the spiritual master of the Asuras. That's the background there. Because Shukracharya means he's a Brahmin. He should be with the Devas, not with the Asuras. But because of some disagreement, he ended up becoming the spiritual master of the Asuras. And he's in the line of Bhrigu. In the very beginning of this pastime, when Aditi wanted to get her, we hear about she wanted to get the heavenly planets back for her sons. Why weren't they there? Because Bali Maharaj had taken over. There's a big battle after the churning of the milk ocean. There's a horrendous, one of the biggest battle scenes in the Bhagavatam, I think. It's the one where you hear about, if you remember, people riding on all different kinds of animals, lions and rats and peacock, any animal you can think of practically, they were using as carriers for the battle. And it says there that they were fighting with equals. So if someone was on a horse, then you had to fight with someone on a horse. If someone were riding a human being, which was one of the characters, one of the carriers, then you had to also ride on a human being to fight with them. So during that battle, Bali Maharaj was killed. And Shukracharya brought him back to life. Because Shukracharya, he knew this science. Here he's described as Brahmavidam. That persons like you, Bali Maharaj is saying, persons like you who are Brahmavidam, Brahmavit, who know Brahma, then if somebody gives charity to such persons, then it's even more auspicious. So he knew this science of Mrityu Sanjeevani, how to raise someone from the dead. So even though, because actually Lord Vishnu appeared during that battle, and ultimately the Devas won, this was on the shore of the Milk Ocean. Because the Asuras were angry that they didn't get the nectar because of the trick of Mohini Murti. So there was this big battle that went on. So the Asuras were defeated, and then Bali Maharaj, he enlisted the Brahmins, priests, of the Bhrigu, descendants of Bhrigu, in the Bhrigu line, to perform sacrifice for him. So here again, we see, here's Bali Maharaj, he's in the family of the Asuras, but he's aligning himself with the Bhrigu, followers of Bhrigu. So they performed sacrifices for Bali Maharaj, and he became empowered after that. We hear how things were created, I don't remember if it's out of the sacrificial fire, but somehow they appeared. He got a chariot and weapons, and even Prahlad Maharaj appeared on the scene to give his blessings. I think he gave him a garland, if I remember correctly. So then Bali Maharaj became empowered, and he went to take over the heavenly planets. And when the Devas, Indra and the other Devas, saw Bali Maharaj coming with his army to take over, Brihaspati said, there's no use in fighting them now. The time is not right. We often hear this in the Bhagavatam. Because time is all-powerful, you can't defeat time. There's a story in the Ninth Canto about, I forget who the character was. It's in one of these long genealogies that explains this person was a son of so and so and so and so. I forget now who it was, but the man, he ate the payash, you know, the empowered. His wife wanted to get pregnant, and then the man ate it because he got up during the night and he was thirsty or something. So maybe it was just sanctified water, and he took it and he became pregnant, the man. So there it said that the sages, the priests conducting the sacrifice, they said, "What can we do? This is how, shows how powerful time is." Or daiva, you can also say daiva or destiny. Some things are just meant to happen, and this is going to happen. And he produced a son out of his side. And anyway, so the idea is that sometimes the time is not right. So in this case, Brihaspati said, "You can't fight against Bali Maharaj now. He's just too powerful. The time is not right." So the devas, they all escaped in disguise, as it's described, from Indra's city. So then it was in the context of all of this that Vamanadeva appeared, of course, on the request of Aditi to get the heavenly planets back, get Indraloka, Swarga, back from Bali Maharaj to recapture it. So Bali Maharaj, what did he do? He took help from Bhrigu Muni, the followers of the priests in the Bhrigu dynasty. So here he's making this argument. We'll look at the verse, some of the words in the verse here. It's quite interesting. Maybe, I don't know if you were paying careful attention to the purport. I know when I read it, it seems like Prabhupada was taking us in one direction, and then he went in another way. At least it seemed that way to me. I'll read the sentence. One of the, I guess you might call it a problem I have, is being an editor, I tend to look at words very closely. So sometimes I get a little bit mental. But here's what Prabhupada says in his second sentence. "If a benevolent and merciful person exhibits his pride in becoming poverty-stricken by giving his possessions in charity for good causes..." So you think that Prabhupada's saying something bad about the person. He's exhibiting his pride by becoming poverty-stricken. So I expected some more criticism in the next part of the verse. The next part of the sentence. But the sentence says, "His poverty is a welcome and auspicious sign of a great personality." So even though he's exhibiting his pride, Srila Prabhupada is not criticizing him for it. I think one way we can look at this is that we can say, well, for Kshatriya, there's bound to be some pride. It's part of the Kshatriya's nature. That's just who they are. And in fact, it becomes a motivating factor. According to our situation in the modes of material nature, different things motivate us. And one thing that the thing that motivates the Kshatriyas is being famous for giving in charity. That makes them proud. It makes them feel good. And it helps them to perform their occupational duty in the Varnashram, to do the things that they're supposed to do. So they get enlivened by that kind of thing. Kshatriyas will naturally get enlivened by things that are, it may not be enlivening to a Brahmin, for example. One of the symptoms of Kshatriya mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita is Ishwara Bhava. So what does this mean, Ishwara Bhava? It means to have the heart, you might say the heart of a controller, to like to take control. We see what happens sometimes when there's some catastrophe, some disaster. What happens? Some people go hide in the corner, just disappear, they faint. That's what I tend to do when there's a problem, or I feel faint, if I'm challenged physically. So, but what do the Kshatriyas do? You do this, you do that, here, we'll build this, we'll build a shelter over here. They start organizing things. Ishwara Bhava, they take control of the situation. That's their nature. And if there's a threat, what do? All the women and children over here, all the men over here, you get in the front, protect everybody else. They like it. In fact, they get, fired up. They get fired up when the opportunity comes, even the opportunity for combat, for fighting. We hear about Parikshit Maharaj, that when he heard that Kali was in his kingdom, he thought, well, it's been a little boring, now I get to fight. Because all this practice, you practice all the time, but you never get a chance to really fight. Of course, it seems like in Vedic times, it's something that's always interesting to me, is it seems like there was a lot of fighting going on during those times, because the kings, In fact, one of the things they're supposed to do, especially your righteous king, you're supposed to subjugate everyone to bring them into the God-conscious culture, Varnashram culture. It said this even about Lord Ram. Lord Ram was the ideal king, so whatever he did must have been right. So one of the things he did was he sent out his brothers to conquer in all directions, to bring everyone under subjugation to the rule, Ram Raja. So the Kshatriyas, they have this Ishwara Bhava, they have this Yudhyaya Chapyapalayanam, they don't flee from battle, and so on. So they have these characteristics. So Prabhupada seems to indicate here that pride is okay, at least in someone like Bali Maharaj. It inspires him to be charitable. In fact, we see often how so many, even asuras in Krishna's pastimes or in the Bhagavatam, they're very famous for being charitable. So they like that. And they really want to guard their reputation. This was even an argument for Kamsa. Kamsa not to kill Devaki. Don't kill her, you'll lose your reputation. Or he was thinking that way. Oh, I'll lose my reputation if I kill my sister. Well, yeah, you really lose your reputation. Kill your sister. Behead your sister with a sword on her wedding day. But he was concerned about his reputation. And even in Bhagavad Gita, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he talks on different levels. We see this. It comes out in different places in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, sometimes we may be a little confused. Why is Krishna saying this here? In fact, Arjuna himself was confused. It seems like you're saying one thing. You're telling me to fight, but then you're telling me to be like a yogi, basically. Peaceful and equipoised and all these things. And you're telling me to fight. How can I do both these things? So Krishna was presenting arguments on different levels. And one of the levels that he was appealing to was Arjuna's Kshatriya Bhava. He was telling him, you'll lose your reputation. If you don't fight, people, they won't think you did it because you're compassionate. They'll think you did it because you were a coward. Just imagine that, Arjuna. People calling you a coward. What do you think of that? Sort of goading him, you might say. How'd you like to be called a coward, Arjuna? I remember seeing one time, maybe some devotees put on a play, and they were showing little boys around the time of Krishna and Arjuna, the Pandavas, and the little boys were saying, they were playing, and one of them said, I'm Arjuna. So these were their heroes. They were growing up, these children. They knew about the Pandavas. Of course, they were the rulers. So Arjuna, he's world famous for his heroism. He's also, of course, famous for being Krishna's friend, Krishna Sakha. So that's also part of his reputation he wouldn't want to ruin. So in any case, this is part of the motivation of the Kshatriya, is to be a little bit proud. So here, Bali Maharaj is saying, he's saying how important it is to give in charity and how auspicious it is. First, he defines someone or characterizes someone who gives in charity. He uses these two words, manasvina and karunika. So manasvina here is translated as greatly munificent. Munificent or magnanimous, which of course means charitable. It means charitable, one who wants to give to help others, who has some feeling for helping others. And karunika, also persons celebrated as very merciful. So these words, you can see, they're very, very closely related. So that's the disposition of someone who gives in charity. You have to feel some mercy. And there's a natural human characteristic, actually, we would say, everybody should feel compassion for others, should be charitable, should help others. In fact, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela chapter 9, where he's talking about how he has these fruits of love of Godhead, and he wants to distribute them. And he says, I'm only one person. I want to distribute these all over the world, but how can I do it alone? I order everyone in the world, that one verse says. I order everyone in the world, as Prabhupada translates it, to take up this Krishna consciousness movement and distribute it all over the world. So I want everyone to help me. So in the context of that, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he quotes where he quotes Lord Chaitanya as quoting this verse from the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. I'll give you the context of it. Krishna is walking in the forest of Vrindavan with his friends, enjoying the atmosphere, and he points to the trees and he says, just see how merciful these trees are. And he starts listing all the ways that a tree is merciful, completely giving. They give with their shade, they give with their fruit, they give with their flowers, they give with their twigs, they give with their leaves, they give with their trunks. Every part of the tree is used for serving others. And if someone comes to cut them down, they tolerate, they don't protest. So what a wonderful quality. We should be like a tree, giving like a tree. We also, of course, characterize the cow like that. The cow is giving so much. So then, there, in the context of that, or there, Lord Chaitanya, or Lord Krishna says, Etavas janma sapalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranayaratar diyavacha shreya acharanam sada. Says every living entity, every embodied soul, should serve everyone, should serve humanity, or serve other living entities with prana, artha, dhyā, and vācha, with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. These four things. Shreya ācharanam. Shreya means give shreya, give what is beneficial, as opposed to preya, what is temporarily satisfying, what is ultimately beneficial. You should work for that, everybody. Which is quite an amazing thing, quite an amazing concept, that we propose that human society should be a society of giving, self-sacrifice for the benefit of everybody else, which for most people is not something they want to hear. It's not something I want to hear, frankly, that I'm supposed to not think of myself, but think of giving to others. That's how we're supposed to live our lives. That's instruction from Krishna. Give to everyone else. Of course, what happens when you do that, then you become satisfied. In fact, sometimes they do surveys, and they find that people who give are happier than people who don't give. People who just take. They're givers and takers. And the givers are happier than the takers. That's what they find, psychologically. In fact, Prabhupada says, because this is our principle, of course, We often apply it to Krishna, that it's not for me, it's for Krishna. Tad arpanam, tad kurushva mad arpanam. Krishna says, do it for me, for my cause. Or water the root of the tree is our little slogan. So Prabhupada says that that's actually shown, that that's inherent within us, the tendency to do that, because even people who don't have any spiritual culture, they're giving. People give. People are complete atheists. They feel this spontaneous desire to help others. Where does this come from? A lot of times, you know that today, the theory of evolution is used for explaining everything. Everything. They explain it. They always try to tie it. There's so much propaganda to drill it in. You have to accept. If you don't accept evolution, then you're just... you're crazy. You're back in living in the Middle Ages or something. We've made so much progress. Now it's proven evolution is real. So everything is just a default position. If you want to explain why things are like this or why people are like this, then you use evolution. But it seems a little difficult. Now they maybe have their arguments. But why to explain just the desire for goodness or self-sacrifice? This voluntarily, because the whole idea is that the species or even the individual is struggling to survive. So if I'm giving of myself, taking away something that's beneficial to me, to give to others, that's not going to help me. So we say, why is that coming out? Because it's there in the heart, it's in the soul. It's actually who we are. Ultimately, it's who we are. We are givers. But now, of course, it's hard to give. Giving in charity. Especially when it hurts. If you're a multi-billionaire and you give a few hundred dollars, then that doesn't hurt. But when it hurts a little, then it's difficult. That's real charity. And here, going back to this idea of pride, it's nice to be recognized too. Of course, anyone who's organizing a charity, trying to get donations, you know this principle, you have to recognize your donors. So, but as devotees, we may think, no, I don't want to be recognized. Keep my donation anonymous. I'll take, you know, at least ideally, we might think like that. I don't want to be recognized. I don't want to be proud. But I've heard, actually, this is just regular human psychology. Someone said, one of the greatest feelings is when you gave something anonymously, and yet you were discovered, actually, that you did it. So you get the benefit of not only giving in charity, but being seen as a humble person, too, even though you're really happy they found out it was you. So that's our side. Yes, I'm very humble, but I hope they find out that I actually gave this. So we have this, of course, within us. But ideally, of course, we give because it's our nature. Ultimately, it's because of our nature. So these two characteristics are given here. A very merciful person and a very munificent person. What happens when they give in charity? Shobhanam. It's very auspicious. The Prabhupada says, even though you're already auspicious because you have these characteristics of being merciful and charitable, but you become even more auspicious, or your life becomes auspicious. This word, I don't know if you think about what it means. Auspicious means that it portends something good for the future. In other words, it's bringing something good. That's what auspicious means. Just like we have omens. So you have an auspicious omen and a bad omen or an inauspicious omen. So if you do something that we say, we do so many things, we say, oh, that's very auspicious. So what does that mean? That means that something is good is going to come from what you've just done, from that activity. That's the idea of auspicious. So if you give in charity, then you're going to get rewarded for that. Now we know, of course, from our books that there, depending on who you give charity to, you get different results. And according to your consciousness in giving, so many considerations are given there in Bhagavad Gita. So here we see that Bali Maharaj is saying, just to give to an ordinary person is very auspicious. What to speak of giving to someone like you? Brahmavidam bhavadrisham. Bhavadrisham means like your good self. And as I said before, Brahmavidam means one who knows Brahma. Now, interestingly, Prabhupada doesn't use this adjective to describe Shukracharya. Did I say Bali Maharaj? Shukracharya is described here as Brahmavid, one who knows Brahma. So this is actually high praise. He's actually a learned, very learned person. He knows the Shastra. He knew this Mrityu Sanjeevani, which most people don't know, how to bring somebody back to life. So it says here, Bali Maharaj is saying that just giving to an ordinary person is auspicious. Then what to speak of giving to someone like your good self? Now in the Sanskrit here, the Sanskrit for this, what I'm saying as what to speak of, is kuta, what, puna, again. But I'm saying what to speak of because it's sort of equivalent to this. There's something interesting which I just discovered just within the last couple of years. Is this is one of the principles of argument or rhetoric in presenting the Vedas, one of the nyayas. It's called kaimutya nyaya. When I was there was someone after I'd given class one time and I was using this phrase, what to speak of, and someone, a fairly new person, he said, I never heard anybody say what to speak of except devotees. In fact, Jayadvaita Swami, he looked, because he was working on the BBT style guide, and he went online, he looked around, and he couldn't find anybody saying what to speak of except one person. And that person was quoted, and he happened to be a politician from Hawaii who was the father of Tulsi Gabbard, who I think you all know. She's a congress lady from Hawaii. So her father, who was also Hare Krishna, he was quoted as saying it somewhere on Google. So what to speak of? So we say it all the time. So I told this person, I had discovered that actually, literally, this is there in the Sanskrit, kim uta, which you find in many, many verses. Kim uta. For example, in the verse, Is it getting late? No, not too late. Tulayamalavenapi na swargam na punarbhavam bhagavat sangi sangasya. What's the last line? Kim utarshisha. Anyway, the last few words. Kim utarshisha. So it says, even a moment's association with a pure devotee, you can't compare it to going to the heavenly planets or even liberation. What to speak of? Kim uta ashisha. So ashisha means ashirvad, basically. Material benedictions, which are those who are meant for death. So what to speak of? And you find this phrase all over the place. So the idea is that if you're making an argument, you make an argument for something lesser, and then you say, what to speak of the greater thing. For example, you might say, look, this little boy can lift this rock. What to speak of his father? Obviously, his father can do it. So that's the idea here. Now, the phrase isn't used, kim uta, but this kuta puna seems to be quite similar, the same idea, that Bali Maharaj is saying that if a person gives in charity to just an ordinary person, they get so much auspiciousness, what to speak of giving to someone like your good self. They'll get so much from it. So then he concludes, of course, tato vato rasya dami vanchitam. So I'm going to give to this little brahmachari. You know, in Krishna, in his leelas, he has a sense of humor, the way he does things, and some things just seem to be fitting. For example, Lord Varaha, he's a boar. So a boar is kind of like a pig, a hog, in a sense. Vidvaraha, and a village hog, and then, of course, Varaha. So a boar. But what do? We see them in Vrindavan. They're in the gutter, in the sewer. So they go to dirty places. So if you want to get the earth from a dirty place, it's not really dirty, but the bottom of the ocean, so go down into the mud and muck, then you send a boar to do the job. Or you come as a boar yourself to do the job. So I always see here, seems a little humor here, that Bali Maharaj, he's telling Vamanadeva, I can give you anything. And you're only asking for 3 steps of land, 3 paces of land. So 3 paces is not very much, especially for a little vata, a little midget, a little small person like you. What's 3 paces? So it's like beyond comprehension. It's like practically you can't even figure out, what's he going to take? 3 paces of land, such a small person. So then we see how Krishna is so amazing. So this very, very small person, actually, by the way, usually, of course, there's a disease, dwarfism. So it's a physical handicap. It's not something that's normal. A normal person is not small. So if he is literally like that, usually dwarfs are not very attractive looking. Generally, it's a lot of times their features are distorted and so on. But Vamanadeva is known for his beauty. Different incarnations of the Lord display different opulences of the Lord. This is described in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, maybe by Rupa Goswami, maybe in other places, that Vamanadeva is known especially for his beauty. So he was a dwarf, but not an ugly dwarf. He was extremely beautiful. But he's so small, really very beautiful. We were hearing the other day from, I think it was Radha Raman Maharaj was explaining how Bali Maharaj, because of his being blessed by his guru, he was attracted, or being blessed by Prahlad Maharaj, he was attracted to Vamanadeva right away. Oh, because he was pious. He had some sukriti, bhakti sukriti. So he was blessed to be attracted to him. And he was, of course, so attractive. He was so beautiful. But he was so small, but then in a moment, one leg goes up through the higher planets, and then ultimately all the way through the top of the universe. So this is, and Bali Maharaj, one other point I wanted to make is one reason we can say that Shukracharya is called Brahmavidam, because he knew who Vamanadeva was. Others didn't necessarily know, but he knew, he could tell, because he had Brahma Gyan. He was elevated enough that he could see, this is Vishnu, don't you see? This is Vishnu. he could understand. So he had some spiritual potency that he could see something like that. So Bali Maharaj here is explaining to him why, even though you're such an exalted soul, I'm going to give everything to this person. Of course, he's going to get everything in return. You know, Bali Maharaj, he'll become the next Indra. The Indras change with each Manvantar. So now we're in Vaivaswata Manu. And then in the next Manvantar, after his stint in Sutala Loka, then he'll become the next Indra. The current Indra, his name is Purandar. I always wonder if the Indras always have eyes. Of course, we all know the story, how he got the eyes. But is that just Purandar? Does the Indra keep making that mistake over and over again? Because there are lots of Indras. Because there are lots of Manus, or lots of Manvantars. Anyway, the current Indra is Purandar. And the next Indra, that will be Bali Maharaj. So he'll get to stay there this time. In Indra Loka, he'll be able to rule there for one Manvantar. Alright, so we'll read the verse again. Manasvina karunika shishobanam yadarti kamo panayena durgati kuta punar brahma vidam bhavadrisham tato vatorasya dadami vanchitam. By giving charity, a benevolent and merciful person undoubtedly becomes even more auspicious, especially when he gives charity to a person like your good self. Under the circumstances, I must give this little brahmachari whatever charity he wants from me. Any discussion? Yes, Prabhu? Do we have a microphone? Yes, Akshaya Tirthi is an auspicious day. Like you say, though, practically every day is auspicious. You look at our Vaishnav calendar, and we're always saying, oh, this is an auspicious day, because it's the appearance day of somebody or disappearance day of someone. So it's hard to grade these things. Maybe we can say Radha Ashtami is the most auspicious day of all. Of course, what about Gaur Purnima? That's combined, Radha Ashtami and Janmashtami together. We have so many auspicious things. And then the devotee is more auspicious than Krishna himself. So Prabhupada's appearance day is most auspicious. So we can go on and on and on. Everything we have is auspicious. In Vrindavan Dham, everything is auspicious. So Prabhupada, I often think, before I came to Krishna consciousness, of course, I'm not from India, so I didn't know anything. I'd never heard the word Krishna, I don't think, except maybe from George Harrison's song. So I often think how, you know, Prabhupada gave this example. He said that the Maha Mantra is like a key to a code. If you're a code breaker and you know the key, then you can figure out all the secrets that are being told by the enemy. So he said the Maha Mantra is like that. So if you know this code, if you master this code, then the whole spiritual world opens up for you. So that, of course, you get realization of it. But in one sense, Prabhupada opened the door for us just by introducing us to Krishna. At least I can say for myself, I knew nothing. I went from zero to so much. I read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree. And just to read the names of those devotees, it's so wonderful. Just to read their names. You know, there are recordings of Prabhupada chanting some of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he's chanting some of those chapters of the tree, the branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree, which is a list of names of Lord Chaitanya's associates, which is quite significant that he chose that to record. So we have so many auspicious days. Every day of Lord Chaitanya, the appearance days, and our calendar doesn't even list them all, of course. Just some major ones who have somehow become famous in the biographies of Lord Chaitanya. So we have so many auspicious days, and so every day we have an opportunity to take advantage and do good for ourselves and do good to others also by bringing them into this auspicious atmosphere. Yes, Prabhu, behind you? You can, if you...
No?
Prabhu, we talk, I mean, let's talk about being compassionate to living entities.
Mm-hmm.
How does one understand the compassion that we should show for Mother Nature?
Compassion and for Mother Nature.
And for Mother Nature, and because that's generally not considered, it's more, being auspicious for living entities, mm-hmm. or being helpful or giving to a living entity is generally considered higher than being or giving to Mother Nature or taking care of Mother Nature. And why do we actually depend on Mother Nature?
Well, Prabhupada displayed his compassion according to time and circumstances, it seems. I was just reading the other day, maybe it was one of these, some of you may get in your email this Srila Prabhupada Today, I think it's called. So every day, they have some little quote from Prabhupada's like Hari Shuri's diary or Shruti Kirti's books, and then they have a photo and they explain something about it. I think it was in one of those. That Shruti Kirti was explaining, or someone, that there was some bug that Prabhupada was in Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada was looking at it for some time. Then at some point he called his servant over and says, "I think he's hungry. You should take him outside." So he had him take a leaf or something and put him outside, take care of him. Then he had Govindadasi chanting to some other insect, I forget what it was, chanting the Maha Mantra. She was down on her hands and knees chanting. So we generally don't do that. We didn't see Prabhupada do that all the time. But sometimes he did display. He did display that kind of thing. In general, Prabhupada would say that becoming Krishna conscious, that solves all the other problems. When you have $1,000,000, then you solve all your $1 problems. So the more people become Krishna conscious, the more they will be kind to other living entities and more respectful of the environment. And of course, Prabhupada also championed simple living and high thinking. He really liked the idea of Varnashram communities, rural Varnashram communities. There was a time when Prabhupada was pushing this like anything. I did some research for a class on Varnashram last year, and I was looking up all the things that Prabhupada said, because of course it's somewhat controversial, the idea of Varnashram. So the conclusion I came to was Varnashram is impossible to institute in this day and age, but it has to be done, and the devotees of the Hare Krishna movement have to do it. So he says these kinds of things. He would say these kinds of things. But one of the things that Prabhupada would say was, you know, this idea of simple living and high thinking. So if you live an agrarian life, then you have a much smaller, you know, environmental footprint. You cause much less damage to the environment that way. So our approach overall is to, you know, make people Krishna conscious. That's our solution to everything. In fact, I was thinking of this in context of this verse as far as giving charity, because sometimes people, they think, well, the Hare Krishnas, they're not helping anybody. Of course, we have our food for life. Part of the reason we do that, of course, we want people to have prasadam, but we also do it somewhat as public relations. We want people to like us. So those people they're good people because they feed people. But at Prabhupada, when he was visiting Washington, D.C. in 1976, the Potomac Temple, once someone asked him this question, "What are you doing to help humanity?" And Prabhupada's reply was, I think he quoted Lord Chaitanya, "Yare deke tarikaha Krishna upadesh, amara gyaya guru haya tarihe desh." We're giving everybody Krishna upadesh. We're enlightening people. That's our charity. Because then when people are enlightened, then all the other good things happen automatically. Or to put it again, the watering the root of the tree. That's our charity. We're doing the most important thing. You're trying to help one leaf at a time, and we're watering the root. So overall, that's our approach. Now, if the devotees in their own lives, they want to align themselves with this or that environmental movement as their occupation, maybe, that's all right. I mean, there are definitely worse things that you can do to make your living. But it's not our emphasis. Just like Prabhupada didn't emphasize vegetarianism. There was actually a plot. In fact, some devotees got injured. Or it was found out, I think it was in New Zealand, if I remember correctly, they tried to blow up a slaughterhouse. And Prabhupada was not at all happy with that. It's not our way to do things. We don't blow up slaughterhouses. We blow up people's maya. That's what we do. then they won't build any slaughterhouses. So we have a bigger approach, a better approach to it. All right, we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.